So, coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.3 FM or freakradio.org, it's, yes, your old favorite, the Sunday, October 28th, 2018 show, Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, recorded the day before, but I'm going to pretend it's Sunday, so don't be fooled, but I guess you won't be, because when you hear it, it will be Sunday. So, stay tuned and listen in.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So I'm on the line with activist Pat Malo, who's been working for years now, it seems, on the issue of medical marijuana and then on recreational marijuana. And I last ran into you, Pat, at the shitty council meeting, as I like to call our friends downtown, on Tuesday. Hello.
Yep. Good to be here. I haven't checked in a while, but it has been a wild transition, wild ride, whatever you want to call it, for the last probably 5 years that I've been working on this stuff. And, you know, there's little bits of positive sprinkled throughout this thing, and I think it's everything, you know, as far as the,
Let me interrupt you, Pat, and ask, it's sort of a historical background. How did you first get involved with the marijuana movement in Santa Cruz, or how long you've been in Santa Cruz?
Well, so I've born and raised, never lived anywhere else, just, you know, desperately trying to stay like everybody. And when I was around 20 years old, my dad was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and they, you know, gave him 6 weeks to live. And, you know, with using cannabis in the way that we knew back then, which wasn't too long ago, I think it's, I'm 36 now, so, you know, 15 years ago, we were able to, you know, give him a good quality of life for 2 years. And, you know, in that process, I grew up in Santa Cruz, so I've always been exposed to cannabis. My mom was a midwife, and, you know, so I've been in a lot of cannabis growers' homes delivering babies, but I didn't know that they were cannabis growers until in retrospect. So I've been around it, you know, and this experience with my dad really got me into, oh, well, this is kind of a miracle plant. And then it also,
let me ask you about that. Do you know if, has cannabis actually been used at all much in childbirth or in involved around childbirth care for mothers who are having children?
I mean, I never witnessed anything like that, but I know anecdotal stories of, you know, people using it for, in a similar way that they'd use, you know, pharmaceuticals during childbirth for pain and things like that. And then, you know, there's anecdotal stories. I think that, like, Rastafarians have higher birth weights in Jamaica. You know, so those type of things were, as far as I'm aware, the only people saying anything positive about cannabis and, you know, giving birth. But I know history.
So no new studies or anything like that.
Yeah, and I'm you know, so what part of this, you know, transition has been for me. me that I've gone a lot more from the healing aspects of cannabis to the now political and specifically local politics aspects of cannabis.
Sort of the recreational aspects of cannabis?
You know, the last few years when we started talking about this at the county level and local level, or when I got pulled into this around, you know, 5 years ago or more at this point, there was no recreational cannabis. It was only the Prop 215 medical system.
Now, were you involved with the Measure K activity that kind of was the precursor to the statewide initiatives, some of for which initially failed, ultimately one of which succeeded in, you know, legalizing some uses of recreational cannabis or some amount of it? You may remember in Santa Cruz there was a Measure K initiative that happened. Were you involved at all in that?
I mean, I believe that's early 90s, and I would be...
No, that was actually in 2006. The medical marijuana Measure A was in the early 90s.
But... that's what I'm thinking of. No, so in 2006, I was still an underground person, you know, who was keeping this to myself and for the good of myself and the people that I was supporting with this medicine and, you know, my family.
In 2010, there was another measure that didn't succeed in passing a proposition. I don't know what it wasn't 64. It was, I don't know, 19 maybe. I'm not sure.
19.
You know, but that the concern there for medical marijuana folks was that, you know, it would commercialize things. It would involve a whole system of regulation and restrictions, and that it would essentially gut Proposition 215, the medical marijuana proposition that Dennis Perone and others were successful in passing in 1996.
If Prop 19 would have done that, Prop 64 in many, many ways has done that. So, and that's really been the struggle locally, is how do we preserve any semblance of the good parts of the system that we had under Prop 215. And, you know, the first step to that was getting these producers, the small collectives, licensed to be able to continue on in this and continue helping folks. And that has been a huge issue to the point where in order to be involved in cannabis for any commercial activities, even if those commercial activities are supporting lots and lots of non-commercial access, you have to be licensed, and that starts with local permission, and that's really been the struggle.
Let me ask you, Pat. I know that there have been two arenas in which this is being carried out recently, at least that I'm aware of. One of them is the county, where, in fact, 3 years ago, I guess there was two or 3 years ago, I'm not sure which, there was this attempt of the county to essentially, you know, severely restrict marijuana cultivation. Then, you know, we have recently the city's activities. Well, a year ago they were doing this, you know, we're not going to let anybody open up an Amsterdam-style smoking area, which seems to me be perfectly reasonable if you've got all these alcohol outlets. It's ridiculous that you don't have it. So can you kind of give us a little historical background about those struggles? And I guess what I actually want to ask about is the response of the marijuana cultivators community, and we've talked about this before, to the attempt to shut down cultivation or severely restrict it, was to get together on a referendum on this issue.
Yeah, I mean, we had, you were talking about, seems like longer, but around 3, maybe 4 years ago now, 3 years ago now, there was the proposed, the county passed a grow ban. We organized, gathered a bunch of signatures, and was able to get that removed, a referendum. But we never went through because of organizational issues, different interests within the cannabis community. We were never able to follow through completely with passing our own initiative.
Well, what about at this most recent, not the most recent, but the county's activity when it, you know, essentially came back with, it looked like a lot more restrictions against the, what did you call yourselves, the 4C commission that came up with?
C4
commission. You know, I mean, and the county essentially sort of dumped it and went on its own way, the county board of supervisors. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, and there's a long backstory to the, you know, kind of opposing perspectives on within the county on where cannabis should go and cannabis cultivation primarily. But that's been a long back and forth. The C4 had a, you know, compromise recommendations that would still have left a lot of the traditional and smallest, you know, medical collectives and producers out of it. And then the county went even further and, you know, basically adopted the semblance of the C4 recommendations, but with a few more restrictions, and as well as, kind of a long process in creating a cannabis licensing department that you had to get clearance through, and having people go through the planning department as well, and putting basically having this come out very slowly and kind of years too late.
Now, why was there no response similar to the referendum attempt of the year or two before, when the county came up with a piece of crap and tried to, you know, crap on the rest of the county?
I think what happened is that a lot of folks who were united in that referendum, because that referendum would have banned everyone, you know, a lot of folks saw the best next step as, or their particular projects or cultivation sites' best next step as going through this, you know, C4 process and seeing what you could get out of the end of that. And so those folks, in a lot of ways, weren't wrong, because there was a big group of people compared to where the county wanted this in the beginning, which is just flat land, commercial ag, existing greenhouses, similar to what we saw in Monterey County. And the county, to its credit, put in, you know, a lot more zones than just commercial ag.
Did they have, by the way, I know one of the issues was this 1 mile from the coastal zone.
Yeah, coastal zone plus a mile or plus a mile buffer, and all these exclusions in the end added up to where I think most people in retrospect think that, you know, their money probably could have been used for an initiative. But, you know, it's hard because a lot of people with the most resources saw a potential path through this county, you know, jumping through their hoops without doing that initiative. And a lot of people who with the least amount to put towards an initiative were the ones who were probably going to be excluded. So
we see then that that they do have this mile into the coastal zone, exclusion zone. Is that what we have?
Yeah, except for commercial ag, existing property structures.
And another issue was the amount.
Big farmers who will have gardens within the coastal zone.
Another
parcels, residential, spots can't.
Another issue was the issue of the size of the parcels. It was requiring relatively large parcels, right?
Yeah, and we were able to get those numbers dropped down to where I don't think anyone's applied for it yet, but a 500-square-foot cottage license that we almost got with no acreage cap, or acreage minimum, but it came to 3-acre minimum. So, you know, the county, in one sense, has looser zoning restrictions than most anywhere else in the state. On the other sense, they totally failed with taking people who were obeying the last set of rules and transitioning them into this new set of rules.
How many people, or how many growers, or what percentage of the growing population, it's kind of hard for me to put this, but is actually impacted by this minimum of 3 acres?
Well, so, you know, everyone, not just there's a huge amount of people who are either in the wrong zoning, so just a straight residential zoning, and with a, you know, the very shows that would happen there that would be legal under the Prop 215, or anyone who is on some of these more rural properties but are smaller than 3 acres. And we estimate, when we did our loose, you know, kind of surveys and stuff, we have at least half the folks were under 5 acres, because that's the last minimum that was proposed by the C4. So we did the polling on that, and also more than half of the folks were generating less than $50,000 gross with their businesses. So
now, was that $50,000 gross also a minimum, or was it?
No, that was just as an example of the scale of most people. And so it wasn't the majority of folks. There's a lot of small gardens, and you know, there's a handful of bigger gardens that were already on these parcels that would qualify. A handful of folks that were able to relocate to what would look like the qualifying parcel. But really, out of the, you know, thousands of legal cannabis cultivators and commercial cannabis cultivators that were here before 2016, and now in 2018, we've probably got most of them a large handful have gone out of business or left, and the majority of them who have stayed haven't been able to get licensed. So really, this, you know, project of legalization or regulation has really created more illegal cannabis and unregulated cannabis out of folks who were trying to obey the best they possibly could the last set of rules in the 215 system.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, I remember running into you about a year or two ago when Sheriff Hart was giving his pep talk to folks here in Felton. Maybe it was a couple years ago. And he actually agreed to, you know, people were concerned about people being busted a lot. And has there been a back down on enforcement, or has there, because I know a lot of the money of this, one of these 2016 measures was going to enforcement of marijuana cultivation as part of this, to me, you know, it's a sort of a police state response to what is actually a beneficial herb. And, you know, you don't have people going after corn and other, maybe you do with alcohol and pharmaceuticals. Maybe you don't. I'm not aware that you do so much.
And the enforcement locally for the last couple of years has been milder than it had been. And that was because the sheriff's office was waiting for people to be able to transition. They were waiting for the cannabis licensing office to really sort things out. And now county cannabis licensing office has 2 sheriffs that have worked for the licensing office. And they've been doing a first round of enforcement this fall, basically starting in August, and they spent and it's, you know, not hard enforcement like we've seen in the past, and not even the kind of code enforcement that we've seen in the, you know, last 4 or 5 years. It's been first starting with a cease and desist kind of letter, and then having visits where they're kind of half a enforcement visit, but half a kind of reminding you to come down and get licensed if your property would qualify. And the people who have been getting these letters are folks who haven't registered their property with the, you know, because there was a registration program the county put on a few years ago. And so folks who have updated their registration with an address or parcel numbers, those parcels haven't been visited unless they're, you know, grossly out of compliance. And we're still kind of waiting and starting the first bits of enforcement that the licensing department has really been using as a head.
Well, yet into this. Pat, yet you call it fierce. What do you mean by that?
I think I misspoke on reminding folks that, you know, next year this isn't going to be...
You say it's fierce, though. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that... I don't know if you heard me right. I don't remember when I said fierce.
Maybe you didn't say fierce. I could have misheard you. Most recently, of course, we ran into each other at the city council meeting, and you and others were talking about the need to cut back on the taxes that the city was leveling on, I guess, distributors and other purveyors. What happened with that, and what's the situation? Looks like you got shot down, although surprisingly, Rochelle Noroy and joined Councilmember Crone in at least requesting a cutback to 3% from the current, yep. 8 or 9%?
And how that settled was, we were hoping to have an immediate reduction on testing and distribution, which we were successful in. We also wanted for them to address these other license types of manufacturing, cultivation, and retail. And they gave direction to staff to come back with those numbers, so they weren't ready to lower it that day, which would have been, you know, our ultimate objective. But also, staff recommendations were to hire a consultant, which we think is a waste of money and a waste of time, and we were successful in having them not hire a consultant, which is good. And so, all in all, it's progress. It's kind of
What's the motivation here? You know, what's the motivation? I mean, it looks to me like this is the same reefer madness stuff that we've always seen coming from sort of conservative forces who are really drug warriors, who are, you know. Hey. What do you make of this?
Well, so that's what I feel like. We still have the residual ideas and prejudices about cannabis that come from the drug war, and the drug war hasn't stopped, so we still have these ideas, and the real, you know, people have looked at the stereotype of cannabis and drug dealers of, oh, there's so much money here, and so a lot of the beginnings parts of, legalization in every state and in California has been sold to folks of, oh, you'll get tax money, you know, you'll get tax money for this. This will be the revenues that will come in and save, every single local government has deficits, including San Andreas City, you know, and so I think that there was a trend with the tax rates at a certain level, not really knowing how that would affect this new regulated industry, and, it's been so hard for folks to get licensed, and there's only such a small amount of what was cannabis businesses to have been able to transition, and so if, you know, our idea is that if this thing is going to go on, if legal cannabis is going to go on, then and if it's going to happen in Santa Cruz, then these folks who are lucky enough or, you know, have enough resources to get through this process, they can't just instantly go out of business, because then there'll be no path to follow. There'll be no way to transition this, you know, what was a legal, you know, huge industry in Santa Cruz back into something that takes care of people. And so it's not as exciting kind of stuff, and it really, my heart has been broken in the last few years of watching everyone that I kind of got into this with and all the smaller folks be phased out and not be able to make certain hurdles, and really large producers in other counties crashing the market on everyone. And, it's kind of a survivors now need to survive and build something positive.
Now, this was kind of predicted by people like Valerie Corral, right? Who were concerned that there would be, she was opposed to any kind of non-really closely curtailed collective stuff. I mean, I know that I was trying to get her to agree 20 years ago to speak up on behalf of against the city council's very repressive local ordinances that were driving medical marijuana distributors away. For 5 years, there were no distribution areas in Santa Cruz between 2000 and 2005, yep. And Corral would say nothing about it because she had her little collective, of which you were a part, I understand, And I don't know.
Not at that time in the. I've gotten involved with Wham since.
I got you. My apologies there, but not for the criticism of the collective's moves.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always seemed, you know, much as I like Valerie in many ways, and she was an instrumental figure in, you know, initially, you know, beginning this kind of thing. It's. I guess the concern I have is right now we have Wham has been out of operation, what, for about 9 months?
Yeah, since 2018, we've had our doors closed.
And now you're planning to open up again? Is that the plan?
Yep, we've got a spot that is almost finalized, and then we have a long build-out and all of this kind of stuff ahead. And, Wham has had a terrible time, even as one of the lucky ones, like you having complete and sometimes the only blessing from the only group with, you know, kind of unequivocal blessing from Santa Cruz City and the county and good standing in the community, is they haven't really even been able, or we haven't been able to kind of fit Val's model of the collective into this new state regulation. And so, even though Wham has been the, chosen one for the county and city, and I frankly agree with you on that.
Is that because of city? Is that because of city restrictions, Pat, or because of state restrictions?
It's because of state. We have total city cooperation and blessing. It was about, in the first case, the old site that we thought was going to get through, it couldn't get through because you need permission from the landowner, and in that case the landlord didn't hold the note on the property. It was a bank, and banks don't do cannabis stuff, and so that's where we couldn't get the permission from the landowner technically for that site, and that's what put us out. So it was part of the state rules and also federal issue because banks.
Now, in the 1990s, you may remember, or I don't know if you were, watching it in those days, but there was a lot of cannabis operations. There was Kate Wells and Ed Fry, and Ed Fry's place had a cannabis club. There were, there were cannabis distribution centers that were tolerated. Has that happened since then in a similar way because of all these restrictions that have come?
No, and that's what I think is the sad thing about what's going to happen in the future, is that it has been decriminalized, so there's not the same penalties. And in other places like L.A., Bakersfield, and bigger spots, there is a lot of unlicensed operators. But, these things are going to get shut down and rolled back, and that's what we're probably going to see in the next couple of years, is that the folks who weren't able or didn't want to get into this are actually going to have, not 1990s kind of guns in the face enforcement stuff, but they're going to have issues continuing on. And in Santa Cruz, there's definitely not going to be room for unlicensed, out in the open operators, because we're small enough place where it's kind of have enough.
Why won't there be? I mean, why there was in the 90s? Why isn't there again? Who won't tolerate them? Who won't tolerate them, though? See, I guess what I'm asking is the situation becomes more repressive as a consequence of some of this tax money going to additional enforcement?
Yeah, and not necessarily just locally at all, because I don't think huge amounts of local tax money are being directed at this, but I think there's money statewide now for going and, cracking down, so to speak, on unlicensed operators. And we've seen that start to happen in L.A., where they had, I think, 50 unlicensed businesses, mostly deliveries, shut down. But there was one unlicensed delivery service that was shut down in Santa Cruz County that I know about recently. So, it's happening.
Has MedEx been shut down?
I don't know specifically about their case or even really who they are.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, we've had the proprietor of MedEx on our show, and Anita Henry for a number of number of shows some time ago, but I don't know what the story is. I thought you might. So what are the next steps that you encourage people supporting freer distribution? And also, my big issue with you, as you always remember, or you may remember, is low-income access. We've heard recently from Andy Carcello, who's a homeless advocate as well, who's had a lot of struggles with the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I call Coral Street, about how there's essentially a lot of rip-off, kind of police state quality to the commercial salespeople in Santa Cruz, whether it's, I guess it's not Greenway anymore. Greenway got shoved out. I guess it's
Kind People's.
Right.
They went in the old Greenway thing. And I think that, compassionate access, there's a compassionate access bill that actually got vetoed by Jerry Brown that would have at least taken off the barriers for licensed people to give, products away to people who need it. And that's been, a big issue with these new rules is that even folks who are just trying to give free medicine away to the patients that they used to give free medicine away within these collectives aren't allowed to do it. So even licensed folks would have to find ways to pay the excise tax on the products that they're giving away.
What are those taxes?
Difficult. And then local, these small collectives, just person-to-person stuff, in one sense, these collectives have been limited to 5 patients. So a lot of people who are relying on kind of the bigger collectives or bigger grows where they got free products from for being a member of the collective, that system's gone away, and that's affected a lot of people. You do have the ability as a person now to give, up to 1 ounce directly to another person, which is good, and I think that really, if everyone who has the ability to can grow some plants in their backyard and be able to give it away, I mean, that's, I think, the biggest thing that people can do. I mean, last year, I was just an individual, just grew my backyard full and gave all that away to, my friends and family members, similar to what I would have done under a collective. I did it with just out of collective and still have legal protection for that. But I think that what you're more pointing at is what in these bigger businesses, especially the ones that have had the blessing of the city and things do to provide, low-income access, and, we're successful in getting a line about low-income access in the county ordinance as part of the C4 recommendations, and to this point, there's not really been.
Wasn't there earlier, earlier as far back as, 2009, 2010, a requirement for low-income access in county regulations here?
Yeah, that was part of the C4 recommendations, and they passed through every single cultivation draft, but really not much has happened with it, I think that, and
so this has been on the books for 8 or 9 years, 10 years.
And proposed for a long time. It might have been part of 7.126, the old cultivation ordinance as well, and in that case it would have been from 2012, 13, but definitely in the new ordinance that became law at the beginning of the summer, there's a carve out for creation of a very low income access program.
You may remember, maybe you don't, I do, Roger Mensch up in Felton was relentlessly pursued by DA Bob Lee for his cannabis distribution, medical marijuana distribution club. Is there still this DA, find him, prosecute him approach to people in Santa Cruz County who are, engaged in this kind of distribution?
So a phase where statewide people are looking at civil enforcement, like code compliance issues and that, to be able to, enforce on cultivators,
Do we have many people still in jail in Santa Cruz for marijuana crimes? I know there was kind of an action up in San Francisco where there were demands that, and I think to some extent maybe a response to the DA up there saying he wasn't going to prosecute, he was going to clear people's records. Is that happening here in Santa Cruz?
So I personally don't know, but I know that my impression has been that there hasn't been a just cannabis arrest in Santa Cruz for the last few years. Like the DA hasn't put a case forward with these things, and mostly things have just been chopped down and cited. You know, and I could be wrong about that. I know that they're having serious issues statewide about people who would have been able to get their, you know, these things expunged already if they were outside the prison system, haven't been let out yet to be able to clear these things. And so I know that there's some issues and some attorneys who are working that I know that are kind of working on that end of the issue, but I don't know. I would doubt that there's people, you know, still in Santa Cruz County jails for cannabis crimes.
So we've been talking with Pat Malo. Pat, do you write about this occasionally? And if you don't, do you have any suggestions as to where people should go to get the latest updates? I know there was Palm Springs bum, Craig Canada's website in the past, did a lot of coverage of medical marijuana. Any suggestions now?
I don't write. I probably should or probably shouldn't, depending on who you ask. There's not much that I can just offhand recommend for a good perspective on cannabis right now, because I think it's so chaotic and there's so much information out there. I think that people should just dig around, and I don't know if Craig Canada's not giving his site anymore, but a lot of the kind of traditional activists who drove this thing forward in that perspective has really been lost in this whole thing. So I can't even recommend a good place for
Americans for Safe Access.
Yeah, I mean, I love a lot of what they're doing, and I love, you know, the kind of their bigger, issues around like what they're doing in other states and providing, you know, information to people to get this medical fight going. I also really like, in some ways, the International Cannabis Farmers Association, which is started in 2016, and has a lot of kind of good people who are from the kind of more traditional cannabis background. But everything's gotten so much of it is just industry stuff that doesn't really apply to the average folk, and a lot of the, you know, kind of average folk have gone back underground a little bit more, and so most of the discussion around cannabis is really not what it was.
However, you are still out there, and I'm going to end this 15-minute conversation, which has gone on 40 minutes now, but I'm going to give you the last word.
So I'm still involved. I just basically, because I see this as kind of both, we need to end the drug war so that even how messed up the regulatory system in California is, it has to eventually be a success. It has to be room for, you know, new kind of business models in this, and I still see more hope in cannabis than I do in the mainstream economy, even though cannabis is becoming mainstream faster and faster. And I do think California needs to have some sort of model of how to legalize in a sane, you know, more ethical way, so it can help and unravel this, you know, the crazy drug war and the prison system and all this, like, mechanism.
Well, I'm going to be getting back to you with more updates if I ever can. It's often difficult to reach you, but I do appreciate your, you know, making yourself available, giving me your new phone number, and you should also answer your emails, Pat Malo.
Yeah, well, I'm doing my best, and, you know, this has been just, I feel like it's like I worked in a factory that was going to get closed, so I started fighting about it like you're supposed to, but I don't claim to have all the answers or be the very best, you know.
Hey, I appreciate you taking the time, Pat, and I'm gonna let you get on with your journey, because I know you're talking to me on the road, so.
Yep, thank you, and thanks for all your work, and, keep in touch if you can, and I'll try to be better about things.
Thanks, Pat.
Great.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was, of course, Pat Malo of, I don't know exactly what organization he's working with. He was with WHAM. He worked on I think it was the C4 committee, which was made recommendations that were largely or somewhat ignored or partially implemented by the Board of Stupid Vipers, as I call our Board of Supervisors. And, that's what I got, a long-awaited report from him, and that's what you got. So let's take a breather.